Having said this with a smile, Beelzebub became silent, and after a short pause, he made a very strange gesture with his left hand, and in a tone of voice not natural to him, continued, "While I am recalling these events of a period so long ago in my existence, the wish arises to make a sincere confession to you, just to you, one of my direct heirs, who will inevitably represent the sum of all my deeds in the course of my being existence. That is to say, I wish to confess to you, in all sincerity, that although my essence, with the consent of the parts of my presence, subject to it alone, had decided to participate in the scientific experiment about to take place within Gurnahur Harhar's new invention, and although I had entered its chief demonstrating part without the least compulsion from outside, yet this same essence of mine had allowed to creep into my being and to develop there, side by side with the strange sensations I have described to you, a criminally egoistic anxiety for the safety of my personal existence. However, my boy, so that you may not be too distressed by this confession, it is not superfluous to add that this was the first time this ever happened to me, and also the last throughout my entire being existence. But perhaps it would be better for the present not to touch on questions that concern only our family. Let us rather return to my tale about the omnipresent Okidanok and my essence friend, Gurnahur Harhar, who, by the way, once recognized by ordinary three-brained beings everywhere as a great scientist, is today no longer considered great, and to cap it all, thanks to the fame of his own result, that it to say his son, he is now a has-been, or as our dear Mullah Nasruddin sometimes says in such cases, he's up to his neck in an old American galosh. Well then, while Gurnahur Harhar was floundering about, he finally managed with great difficulty and only by means of a very complicated maneuver to get his planetary body, burdened as it was with its heavy and unusual equipment, down onto the chair again. And this time he fastened it all with screws that were on the chair for that purpose. And when we were both more or less settled again and could communicate by means of the artificial connector I mentioned, he drew my attention to the three apparatuses hanging over the table, which, as I told you, looked like momonodoars. On close inspection, all three of these proved to be exactly alike in appearance, each being a sort of socket out of which projected carbon poles like those found in what your favorites call lights. Having drawn my attention to these three objects resembling mononodoars, he said, each of these outwardly similar apparatuses has a direct connection with the secondary containers I showed you while we were still outside, and in which all three parts of Okidanok, after the occurrence of the artificial Jartplom, reblend into a single mass. I've constructed these three independent apparatuses in such a way that in this absolutely empty space we can obtain from those secondary containers as much of each of the active parts of Okidanok in a pure state as we need for our experiment. And we can also change, at will, the force of the striving to reblend into a whole which is acquired by them and becomes proper to them according to the density of concentration of their mass. Having said this, he closed the section of the wall that had the property of allowing rays to pass through, and then pulled two switches and pressed a certain button, with the result that a small plate of special mastic lying on the table automatically moved toward the carbon poles. Then, having again drawn my attention to the ammeter and the voltmeter, he added, I have just now admitted the current of the two parts of Okidano called Anodadius and Cathodnadius, giving them the same force of striving to reblend. When I looked at the ammeter and the voltmeter and I saw that their needles had indeed moved and then stopped on the same figures I had noted the first time while we were outside, I was greatly surprised, for in spite of the indications of the needles and Gunnhor Harhar's warning, I had neither noticed nor sensed any change in the degree of visibility of the objects around us. So, without waiting for any further explanations, I asked, but why, then, is there no result from this non-lawful striving to reblend into a whole of the parts of Okidanok? Before answering my question, he turned off the only lamp which drew its power from a special magnetic current. My astonishment increased even more, for in spite of the sudden darkness, I could clearly see through the walls that the needles of the ammeter and the voltmeter had stayed in the same positions. Only after I had somehow or other adapted myself to this surprising observation did Gurnahur Harhar say, I've already told you that the material used for the walls of the construction we are in right now has the property of not allowing any vibrations from any source whatsoever to pass through it, with the exception of certain vibrations arising from nearby concentrations. And these vibrations can be perceived by the organs of sight of three brain beings, provided, of course, that these beings are normal. Furthermore, according to the law called Hetero-Togatar, the Salnich Incoarnian momentum vibrations, or rays, require the property of acting on the organs of perception of beings only after having passed the limit defined by science in the following terms. The result of the manifestation is an exact proportion to the force of striving received from the shock. And so, since the process of the conflict of these two parts of Okidanok has a force of great intensity, the result is manifested at some distance from the place of its origin. Now look. He pressed another button, and suddenly the whole interior was filled with the same blinding light that I had experienced before when I was standing outside the apparatus. This flood of light had apparently been released when Gurnahur Harhar, by pressing the button, had again opened the section of the wall that permitted rays to pass through. He explained further that the light was a consequence of the striving to reblend into a whole of the parts of Okidanok, which were proceeding in the absolutely empty space inside, and it was manifested there owing to what is called reflection from outside, that is to say, to the return of the rays to the place of their origin. He then continued, I'm now going to demonstrate how and by what combinations of the processes of Jartklam and the striving to reblend into a whole of the active parts of Okidanok, there arise in planets from the minerals composing their interior presence, certain definite formations of varying densities, such as mineraloids, gases, metalloids, metals, and so on. And I will show you how these latter, owing to the same factors, are afterward progressively transformed one into another, and how the vibrations flowing from these transformations constitute the totality of vibrations that gives the possibility for planets to attain stability in the process called the common harmonious movement of all systems. For my proposed demonstration, I must, as always, obtain the necessary materials from outside, and my pupils will provide them by means of appliances I have prepared in advance.